And the tide it flows just like a referee, making all the calls, making all the calls. And there are still fragments of a life you wish you had, oh yeah. Deep down in your coffee cups, story with the spoon, story with the spoon. Tell me a good one. I've had a hard time discerning fiction. I gotta stay sharp, 'cause these are thin walls. You never know who might be listening, listening on the other end of galaxies, on the other end of what you see, on the other end of there are still people who sleep in reclining chairs. TV's still blaring on. They don't hear a sound. They don't hear a sound. They're still a little up, just north of place you love when you were a little punk, playing with your friends, yeah, playing with your friends, yeah, playing with your friends. Tell me a good one. I've had a hard time discerning fiction. I gotta stay sharp, 'cause these are thin walls. You never know who might be listening, listening on the other end of galaxies, on the other end of what you see, on the other end of everything, 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 on the other end of everything.
This is WGXC 90.7 FM, Acra, Catskill, Hudson, Greene, and Columbia Counties, New York. Broadcasting locally on 90.7 FM and globally online at WGXC.org. And that's my cue to say this is the Art of the Hudson Valley, and I'm your host, Chad Weckler. The song that you just listened to was performed and written by C. Marie, who is a local musician. And she performed during the first annual Hudson Music Festival, which took place just weeks ago. I'd like to announce at this time, she is the winner of the Waterfront Studio, basically their best talent of the festival. And she received a free recording session at Waterfront Studio, and this was recorded this Sunday, the August 14th. So congratulations, C. And today we are in the studio with Gary Shiro, who's the executive director of the Hudson Opera House, Kari Haddad, who's the owner of Kari Haddad Gallery, and Will Maitland Weiss, who's the executive director of the Arts and Business Council of New York. So welcome, everybody. And I'm looking at our guests, and I'm going to point to Gary. And Gary, introduce yourself, and what is the Hudson Opera House?
Well, Chad, thanks first of all for having us all here. The Hudson Opera House is a multi-art center. The name is sometimes a stumbling block for folks. They wonder if we're an opera company. I still get asked quite frequently, what's our season? When will we get around to Faust? But and in fact, we have some opera programming, but we also have all sorts of other programming. We had over 1,000 programs last year alone, and we do everything from live performances in every kind of genre you can imagine to after-school programs for youth, programs for toddlers. There's workshops for adults in the arts, an ongoing and vibrant exhibition program, readings, lectures, and then large-scale community events like Winter Walk and other things that we participate in town. So it's a very busy place with a lot of different things going on.
And you're open 7 days a week. No wonder you can do over 1,000 programs.
We are. Yeah, people often ask, like, how does that happen? And you can look at some of our weekends and figure it out pretty easily, because there are many Saturdays when there will be a workshop in the morning, a reading in the afternoon, a performance that night. Sometimes that's repeated a couple of days in a row. So that's how they sort of accumulate. But it's wonderful that the place is so busy. And it was a goal when I first came there 13 years ago to, first of all, just get the place open on weekends. And for the first couple of years, we were open 6 days a week. But I always knew that we had to be open every day, because the public is here every day, and especially here in Hudson on weekends when people have free time to travel about, and increasingly there's tourists coming here from all over the place. So for the last, I think, probably 5 years, 5 or 6 years, we've been open 7 days a week, every day but national holidays, and in truth, a lot of those too. Yeah. We haven't yet worked on Christmas, but I think we have put in a couple of New Year's and probably a few Thanksgivings.
What was the condition of the Opera House when you first arrived?
Well, the building was built as the City Hall for Hudson in 1855. And many 19th century town halls were constructed in this fashion, with a big auditorium up on the second floor. There was a real sense of competition in communities that you wanted to have a good venue so that when the interesting artists and authors and political figures, when they were touring, they would come to your town instead of the one just down the road. Wow. So when they were constructing the new City Hall, they decided they really wanted to have an auditorium up on the second floor. There are many of them like this all across America. And at the height of the Gilded Age, around the 1880s, shortly after the Palais Garnier was completed in Paris, what many said at the time, and many still say, the most beautiful opera house in all the world, and it is quite beautiful. Shortly after that time, when the Palais Garnier was getting so much press, many town halls adopted the name Opera House. Huh. So although our building continued to function as City Hall until 1962, for a good portion of that period, it was largely referred to as the Opera House. Hmm. But after 1962, City Hall moved up the street to their present location. The police department, which was in one of the storefront spaces on Warren Street, they moved up to their present location, and the building was abandoned for more than 30 years and sat there decaying, water coming through many places in the ceiling, accumulating in the basement, a lot of accumulated debris in very, very rough shape, some of which you can still see evidence of, although we've cleaned up most of the really bad stuff and now have completed our 12th capital project and have opened most of the first floor and are at the moment working with architects and engineers to develop the plans to be upstairs in the next couple of years.
Well, speaking of coming to Hudson, Carrie, when did you come to Hudson and why?
I came to Hudson, oh God, let's see now, it's 26 years ago. My husband, Nick Haddad, dragged me here from New York City, but he lived in Red Hook. He grew up in Red Hook. And I just fell in love with Hudson the first time I came here, like everyone does. The architecture is so beautiful, and it's a small town, and I just fell in love with the people here as well. I helped open up Hudson Electrical Supply with my brother-in-law, Nick's brother, Randy, and that was interesting, but it's not really my forte, electrical supplies. So I had a lot of friends that were artists, and there were very few venues for artists. So we started this gallery as a cooperative originally, and it was kind of a Mickey Rooney, Judy Garland, let's have a show. And I sanded the floors, and my friend Howard Crouch built the walls. And so it was it was I had never had an art gallery, but I had studied art, and it was great. I loved it. I just loved everything about it. The art was inspiring. The artists are inspiring. They're the soothsayers looking at the world and telling us what they see. It's pretty great. And we sold art, too. That was also very nice. And that now I last year I celebrated my 20th year with Carrie Haddad Gallery. And 3 years ago, I opened up Carrie Haddad Photography, and I just closed that yesterday, unfortunately. Oh. But we have a little, we have a showroom on Warren Street still, and we'll keep it going. I'll still have yearly exhibits at my painting gallery. But it's a business I just kind of happened into, but I really love.
Were you the first gallery in Hudson, art gallery?
Well, of recent years, I was the first, but I understand there was a gallery in the 60s. Mm. But that closed a very long time ago, and yes, I'm the first one.
How many galleries does Hudson have currently?
I believe we're up to 18.
Wow.
All on Warren Street, and it's wonderful to have a couple of people come in your gallery. Oh, can I help you? Well, we're meeting a bunch of friends here, and then we're going to go do all the galleries. I just love that. It's wonderful, and they're fantastic galleries, and the artists that they show are great. I mean, it's a very special thing here in town.
And the artists that you represent, is it mostly painting now? Or now that, are you folding in some of the photographers?
Well, I used to always have some photography on the second floor, and then we decided they needed their own gallery. Mm. And we still will represent them. I guess there's about 20 to 25 wow. that we will be representing still. I have about 65 painters that I represent. And there's quite a variety, a lot of landscape painters. Used to be all I'd sell were landscape paintings, and it's still a big bulk of our sales. But abstract and non-representational art has become more popular over the years. You kind of change according to your client's taste.
And you have a show currently in your gallery that'll close mid-September, and then you'll have another show. Can you just briefly explain the outgoing show, the current show, and then the one coming in?
The current exhibit features paintings by Vince Pamilio, who's been living in the Hudson Valley for many, many years, and in New York City. And Jessica Houston also has a connection in the Hudson Valley, but now she lives in Montreal. And a computer electronic artist, Fernando Orellana, who teaches at Union College, a professor in electronic arts. He has constructed machines that cut little pieces of Play-Doh. It's really a very, very fun exhibit. And the last one is Gabe Brown. She lives in Kingston, and she's a very fine painter that like dreamscapes that she creates. So the four of them are all kind of fun, so we called the show Serious Play. And I recommend coming to see it. And then the next show features Linda Cross, who's another Hudson Valley artist, and Raquel O'Rourke, and Ralph Stout, who lives right on Warren Street. So all the shows, they're about 5.5 weeks each show.
Wonderful. Going to Will. Will is a, would you say you're a resident of Columbia County and also work in New York City?
I definitely like to describe myself that way, and thank you, Chad, for having a second homer on your show as well, or somebody who spreads his time thinly up and down the Hudson River. I'm the executive director of the Arts and Business Council, as you said. Our office is in New York City in Midtown Manhattan, and it's called the Arts and Business Council of New York. The truth is, we're a small office, we have a small staff, and most of what we do is serving arts organizations, artists, and businesses, and I'll touch on that again in a moment, in New York City. But I am passionately interested in having New York defined more broadly as well. Mm-hmm. And just one of the reasons for that is the fact, as you know, that I also have a home up here in Columbia County myself. And to pick up on my two distinguished guests, trying to imagine Hudson without the Opera House doing what it's doing. The fat carry that you say, you know, when you started 20 years ago, it was you shifting over from electrical supply, and you know, we like to think that
an obvious move, I
think. A lot of electricity and energy and so forth in painting and the other visual arts. But seriously, I mean, you know, imagine Warren Street, imagine Hudson without the arts scene that is there, and. I and my family would certainly not have chosen to come and move here if this kind of vibrant arts population was not being celebrated. I was born in New York. I grew up over the border, I blush to say, in Massachusetts, in a little town that had exactly what you're talking about, Gary, one of those town halls. And I remember as a kid going to hear Robert Frost speak in person at my town hall. And it was a big deal because even though I was, whatever it was, 10 years old, I sort of got the concept of what Robert Frost was. And, you know, I knew he was, you know, in library books and important stuff like that.
How great.
And he picked my town because we had, now I know, we had a better second floor meeting space, I guess, than the town next door. But I love spending a small portion of my time up here in Columbia County, and certainly look forward to spending more of it. Part of my introduction, and I've been up here since 2005, so I'm the new kid, but part of my introduction was with Jan Hanvik and the Columbia County Council on the Arts, and I remember one of the first things that Jan said to me with enormous pride is, you know, we have more art galleries per capita than they do in New York City. And I know the per capita is pretty different,
eight million
people, whatever it is in Hudson, but the vibrancy of the art scene here, and not just on Warren Street, not just in Hudson itself, but throughout this county and throughout this area, is a huge impact on the people who've been here for 10 generations, or the people like myself 5 years ago, trying to think, if I could live, you know, anywhere I wanted, and it wasn't just tied to where my current job is, but if I could make my little corner of heaven on earth, where would that be? And I picked Columbia County.
I think both Greene and Columbia County is very rich in cultural and arts, not just in Hudson, certainly. You can go to just about any corner of both counties and experience theater, galleries, visual arts, performance arts. We're very fortunate.
If I can expand for a moment, the Arts and Business Council, my organization, it's not a coincidence that the name business is there as well. I totally think of the Hudson Opera House. I totally think of the Haddad Gallery as important businesses in the town of Hudson, New York. So too the other arts organizations to which you refer. But when we at the Arts and Business Council talk about businesses, we're also talking about those other guys. We're talking about the electric supply place, or we're talking in the city about the big businesses, American Express and Time Warner and Chase and Deutsche Bank and so forth. And unlike my two colleagues here who are, making, presenting, giving access directly to the arts, that most essential thing, really what I do day in and day out is try to persuade people who don't define their vocations or don't define their passion as being in arts and culture, and to get them to realize how important the synergy is between the two communities. We have a joke around my office that I often say that people who work in the arts think that people in the business have two heads, that they're soulless and greedy and all they care about is electrical supply. No, all they care about is the bottom line, whatever. And that people in the business side think that artists all have two heads, and they're totally impractical and hopeless and, you know, no sense of reality and so forth. And so our point of view is that four heads are better than two. And if you can get these guys working together and get some of the pragmatism and efficiencies that exist, not always, as I think we all know, but sometimes in the, quote, business sector, and have these skills and these efficiencies available to artists and marry it to the creativity, the genius that is art, that's the best of all possible worlds.
And switching to Gary, who does a lot of youth programming, do you have to sometimes convince parents or schools that they should be involved in what's happening at the Opera House? Or
I think it's changed over time. I think in the beginning, we had a lot of outreach that we had to do to all kinds of constituencies to help them understand why the programs were valuable. I think through engagement, you know, as one kid would come to a program and like it a lot and go back and tell the other siblings or tell the parents, I mean, we've seen that sort of ripple effect. And with the school, I think in the beginning there was a little bit of confusion and maybe not as much sensitivity about the arts. You know, they're often thought of as something that's frivolous in people's lives, and that's less and less true, but it's still a little bit true. And I just have never seen them that way. And I don't think, in fact, that when you look at the way that people live their lives, they're not, in fact, living their lives as if the arts are frivolous. They're experiencing music and storytelling in many different formats, and they're looking for beauty in many different ways all around them every day, but they don't think of that as necessarily making them an arts person. So we've tried to sort of bring folks along to understand that, you know, the arts aren't this thing that's over here. It's a thing that is a part of your everyday life. We now bring a lot of programs into the school system. I think last year we brought 94 programs into the school system. We've got more things coming up this year, not just the Hudson schools, although mostly the Hudson schools, because we feel the strongest affinity and the strongest responsibility to help the kids that are here in our community that don't have access to high-caliber arts programs, that if we didn't bring them into the school or make it possible for the kids to come see them at no cost, they would never experience some of these things. One of my favorite stories about this is when we brought an ensemble called Badma Handa. They're a Mongolian ensemble, and they, at the time that we presented them, no one had heard of them, including me. But after their sort of manager got in touch with us and shared the music with us, I thought, wow, this is really extraordinary. These are amazing musicians. Let's do it. Let's bring them in. Mm-hmm. And they had a little time on their hands before the gig at the Opera House that night. So we figured, let's find a way to bring them into the schools. And it wasn't, we called around quite a bit and nobody would really take them, as much as they just couldn't really grasp what they were. The music was so strange. We don't get it, they said. The kids won't get it. So the only place that would take them was Questar, the vocational school out on 66. Hmm. And when we went there, it was supposed to be a concert just for sort of the best students in the school. If you haven't been out there, some of the types of students that are, there's special needs students in that school, cosmetology students, carpentry students, auto mechanics, and a fantastic culinary arts program that actually wins awards all the time. But it's not, some of those students are not what you would describe as your core arts base. So it was originally conceived by the administrators there as, well, we'll just bring down the best kids we have for this extraordinary experience. And a wonderful mistake happened. The woman in the office pressed the little button and told the whole school to come down to this concert. So down they all came. Down came all the teachers, who positioned themselves around the room waiting to just pull these kids out of there, as one by one, of course, they misbehaved. And then Badma Handa, this amazing woman with this incredible voice, using a different tonality and a different scale than people are even used to, very unusual sounds, but extraordinary and excellent and piercing and moving. You don't need to know what she's singing about to be really swayed by this music. They start performing, playing these strange instruments that many of them have roots. Contemporary instruments have roots in a lot of these unusual instruments that look sort of like a guitar, sort of like a violin. The ensemble starts playing, and the kids just sat there completely rapt. Mm. And I don't know what was more fun to watch, the kids who were so engaged or the teachers who were absolutely dumbfounded because they couldn't understand why these kids weren't jumping all over the place. Oh. And at the end of that concert, those kids queued up and pooled their money. Kids were reaching into their pockets and pooling their money. They bought every CD that company was traveling with that day. It was extraordinary. And if even for me, an absolute convinced congregant in the Church of the Arts, even for me, it was just an eye-opening experience to see the power of how beauty and art can transcend comprehension and understanding, and people can be engaged and moved by something that's really excellent.
And I often myself forget that having an art form is a skill. It does take it takes raw talent, but it also takes a skill. Whether it's learning what oil paints are, how to use a camera, how to play a musical instrument. Carrie, when you must have a lot of artists calling you, walking in the door, wanting to be represented. What do you look for in artists?
Well, I guess my first response is very personal. If I like it, and if it touches me, I have a lot of fabulous artists. I'm so lucky to be working with and for the artists that I represent. But there are so many more out there, and it's hard. I have to turn away people because I just don't have any more room for them. But I definitely am looking for the experience, and there are many young artists that come into the gallery and want me to look at their work, and they may only have two pieces on a piece of binder paper, but yes, I want to look at it, and I try to be very encouraging, because it's hard to just show someone your work. You're really putting your heart on your sleeve, and you're going to be judged, so I try to be very gentle and encouraging. There are just wonderful artists around here. It's a history of artists in this area. I'm so happy that the Hudson Opera House has exhibits, because you can accommodate a lot of people that aren't at a commercial gallery. But I just go with my gut. If I like it, that's what we show.
Well, then in that case, my opinion is that every gallery and has an owner, has a personality, and that gallery takes the personality of the owner. You're basically a curator, and so the people that enjoy Carrie Haddad Gallery and the artists that you represent is a reflection on you.
And that's what's so fun. We have 18 galleries, but they're all so different, because each person in charge is going to pick what they like. And I feel that's the only way to go. Then my customers, if they like my taste, then they're going to come back, and they're constantly going to be seeing things that they may like.
Will, how do you convince the business end of life to invest in art, or help fund the arts, or bring art into their lives?
Which we work on doing day in, day out, 24/7. You know, you asked the question of Carrie, or you referred to the skill factor, and you know, you represent artists who've been doing it for 30 years, for 40 years, have amazing technique, whether it's something new having to do with computers and cutting out pieces of Play-Doh, I didn't quite follow that, or whether it's somebody painting, you know, a beautiful tree in a field like people have been doing since there were trees and fields. What is the greatest need in the business economy right now? It's creativity. When business leaders talk about it, you know, they describe it as thinking outside of the box, or they describe it as innovation, or they describe it as, you know, an entrepreneurial spirit. You know, does any of you know an artist who you would not describe as entrepreneurial, an essential part of that characteristics? And when, you know, in addition to the fact that selling paintings, selling tickets is part of the economy of the area in the direct sense, a reason that people are going to want to move here and work here and set up offices, particularly in a 21st century economy. You know, the boom growth area is not dairy farming anymore. And I love the dairy farms in this area, but, you know, I suspect that number is shrinking, not growing. The kind of 21st century industries, whether they're technology related, whether they're sort of intellectual service related and so forth, what those employers are looking for is creativity. And that's and I try to make the point that, you know, that kid going to school and having the amazing experience that you described, that kind of exposure and access to the arts is going to make him more creative as an adult and a potential future employee. And even more so engaging in the arts themselves. Two of the artists who I know you've showed, Carrie, happen to be friends of mine, the photographer Marty Rich, who is an architect, but that doesn't make him not a photographer, and Nancy Rutter, who is a painter and happens to have a day job managing the Key Bank over there in Copaig, you know. So, oh wait, no, that means she's a businesswoman and not a painter. Of course, she's a painter. It's fabulous. The fact that these people have this creative outlet, these creative engagements, the desire and the capacity for creative expression is, I would submit, what makes them, you know, a good architect and a good bank manager. Mm. Those same kind of blending of right brain and left brain skills. And we make this point over and over and over again to the business community. If you want to be able to hire a creative workforce, if you want customers who are going to be interested in taking advantage of your product, your services, you are going to be far more successful if you're in a community that has a vibrant art scene.
And I totally agree. I think for anybody who wants to move to a community, they look to, are there supermarkets? Is there culture? If I feel like I want to go out to see a movie or a play, can I? And for some reason, and I will speak Hudson specific, we seem to have something going that is attracting all those aspects. And that's one of the reasons why I feel education, bringing arts into the schools for the exposure, just as you said, Will, of that exposure aspect that will add to whether you're an electrical engineer or you're going to be a farmer, you will learn aspects of creativity, which is a hard thing to, I think, learn.
And I think, Will, you probably are more conversant in these statistics, but I'm fairly certain that the arts are, I think, third statistically in when corporations look to move and they're examining communities. The things that almost everyone across the board wants are good hospitals, good schools, mm-hmm. and then they want arts
right,
environments.
And they
where
may describe it as quality of life.
Right, quality of life for their workers.
The culture of the community and so yeah. forth, but that's exactly what they're talking about. And you're statistically correct, and it's not like if I get one and two, I don't care about three.
Right.
This is the short list.
Right.
I am not going to open a branch office. I am not going to choose to start my entrepreneurial small business in a community that I think has, you know, places no value on education, that has no healthcare services, and I am not going to do it in a community where there is no cultural vibrancy.
And again, you can just see communities all across America as the economy has shifted away from industry, you can see so many communities that have been transformed through the arts, where the arts have really led. And this is where government can be playing an even bigger role by making an investment in the arts in communities all across the nation to help build those communities up, because that's what really brings tourists. It's what really enhances the quality of life. And I would love to see that happen.
It used to drive me crazy when our beloved state of New York had its I Love New York campaign, and it was all about a certain former governor standing, you know, next to a canoe with, you know, on a lake with pretty trees in the background. And New York does have a lot of very pretty trees. Hey, the season's coming up soon. I love it as much as the next guy. But, you know, tree for tree, are our trees really that much more beautiful than Pennsylvania or New Jersey or Connecticut or Vermont? Maybe not. But what does New York have? And not just New York City. That's the, you know, there's a reason why New York City draws 50 million visitors a year. New York City has finally passed Las Vegas and Orlando as the number one destination for foreign tourists coming to the United States. And of course, part of my hope is, particularly for those coming the second, third, the 10th time and so forth, you know, they don't just go see Lion King on Broadway, turn around and go home. But in fact, hey, stay a while. Come on up the river, get on Amtrak, you know, fly JetBlue, whatever it is, and take advantage of the other unique cultural things that this state has.
And Carrie, aren't you finding that increasingly so? I am amazed the number of foreign languages I hear out on Warren Street, especially in the summer, but you know, all times during the year, increasingly there are people that have come here from very far away because they've heard a little something about Hudson. They're curious about it. You know, we're beginning to really pop up in foreign publications, and as the whole media shifts more to an electronic, web-based, blog-based media, you know, people have more and more access all the time and are really curious about this place.
We do get great coverage. New York Times loves us. National magazines write about us because we're great.
Yeah.
But the creative economy in Hudson has made a huge difference. It isn't just the customers coming to buy a painting or seeing an exhibit, but the person that we hire to design our postcards, the printers that we pay to print them, a writer to help write press release or advertising, the framers, the guy that's delivering them, the lawyer that is representing you. I mean, we really do enhance the economy, not in the very obvious ways of enriching your, or people just buying art or paying for the ticket price. The creative economy is always underestimated. And the arts do create lots and lots of jobs. So that's one reason why we should support it even more.
In some ways, I think when you were talking, Gary, about the foreign languages, living in New York City, that's a daily event. You know, you could just, where we lived, you would walk out the street and immediately you would hear a foreign language as a city center. And now Hudson, being the city, the only city in the two counties, we're getting sort of the overflow of New York City, people realizing we're only 2 hours north. And that can only, from this point, spread out even further, sent you to Copaque, Will.
Yes, indeed. And I think you're so right, Gary, about, you know, not just 21st century technology in terms of communications, but the whole phenomenon of social media, the emphasis now, you know, that ability to self-curate, which I don't think is going to put you out of business, Carrie. I think the need, you were so right, Chad, when you talked about, you know, each gallery having its own voice. Just as true of the opera, of the Opera House, each performing arts organization, and whether it's a theater company where that artistic director is, you know, directing all the plays himself, or whether it's the Hudson Opera House, where, you know, Gary's hand is on making the choices of who gets presented there or not. You know, that's a voice. That's an individual act of creativity. And I think everyone, English speakers and every other language speakers as well, are looking for that infinite variety of unique experience. So when they see an article in a national or an international publication, including an online publication, they're reading a blog, whatever it is, and it's like, wow, here's this amazing stuff happening in Columbia County, happening in Greene County, and realize, I can drive there in a couple of hours, or I can hop on a train and get there. Don't lift a finger. And it goes beyond. I have to be careful about this because, I do love it that Lion King is successful. But, I mean, for crying out loud, don't come from Beijing and land at JFK Airport and stay at the Hilton and just see Lion King. There is, Lion King's probably playing in Beijing. That's the last thing you should see. But the artists that you're representing, the artists that are here in, every town and hamlet, that's the unique, incredible experience that, you're going to be telling your children and your grandchildren and your colleagues around the water cooler about when you get back.
Well, as we all travel around, don't we always look for what's regional when we, no matter where we are in the world? We want to know who the local artists are and the tradespeople. We want to know what the local food is, what's popular. We thrive on those regional aspects of where we want to be.
I wonder if it's because as everything becomes accessible to us through the internet and through media, you can walk down the street in Beijing thanks to Google Map, So what you can't do though is what you've said, Chad, experience you can't taste the local cuisine. You can't really go into the local artist studios. And it does seem that along with this growing concern about our food sources and things and supporting agriculture that's local, but I think you're right. It goes beyond that. I think we are becoming more interested in, well, what is unique about this place? What is specific to this place? Who are the artists that are here? And here in the Hudson Valley, there's been a 200 or 300 year tradition of that, where the artists that are here now are walking in the footsteps of Frederick Church and Thomas Cole and Sanford Gifford. I mean, Hudson 100 years ago was a place that was full of artists, some of whom are now the most, most famous people in the Hudson River School, and several of them were founders of the Metropolitan Museum. Mm. Sanford Gifford and Frederick Church were both among the 100 founders of the Metropolitan Museum. So we have an amazing tradition here, and I think and a gift of the great beauty of this place that will just continue to draw not just tourists, but artists and people that are drawn to places that are as beautiful as this.
And now, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Chad, but the music scene in Hudson has just gone wild. It's so fantastic. All the venues for open mic night, there's 3 recording studios, there's Helsinki. I mean, that's amazing. But in theater, we forget how great StageWorks, Equity Theater Company, it's only 4 minutes walk for me, so I try to see everything there. It's fantastic. And we have the Bindlestiff Family Circus here. I mean, they're the best circus. I feel so lucky to be here in a little town of 6,500 people.
It's amazing.
To have the quality of performances. I remember at the Pocketbook Factory during some of the arts walks when Sandra Loring choreographed pieces using people that had worked at the Pocketbook Factory of mixed with professional dancers. I will never forget that. It was the most incredible thing I've ever seen, and it was just here in our little town.
It also the mix, we live in 2011. Boom, it's going to be 2012. But that mix of high tech and high touch, people have been using that expression for decade, 2 decades, whatever it is. But with all due respect for the medium on which everyone is listening to this show, there is something about hearing it live. And with all due respect for, the greatest postcard or catalog and so forth that can be produced, that can be distributed, now electronically, why do people keep coming back and buying? I want the painting. I want the thing itself, or the photograph, whatever it is, on my wall, in my home. That's a part of my identity, a part of my conscious decision-making, my own creativity in terms of making that selection, what I'm going to spend my valuable time listening to, watching, admiring, collecting, hanging on the wall, and so forth. And for all of the infinite access, the Google mapping phenomenon, the reward of doing it in person is going to continue to demand and celebrate the presence of artists in every community where they gather.
Well, I mean, that's another economic engine that you spoke of, Will, is the takeaway. You go to some place and you see a visual art or you hear a musical performance, and then to purchase that visual art or a representation or a CD so that you can take that home or take that wherever you are so that you can remember your experiences of being in that location, another economic engine product. I want to talk about Opera House. I'm sure, Gary, you've gotten lots of questions almost daily. When is the second floor going to open? Because when we talk about venues, as we have with StageWorks and Helsinki and Basilica, the Opera House is also a venue and will be even a more important venue.
Well, I don't want to say more important, but it'll be a lovely...
More square footage.
It'll be a lovely 300-seat space, and certainly the most historic, because it's New York State's oldest surviving theater. And we are actually, if you go past the building today, or certainly if you go down the alley, you'll see carpenters working on finishing the rear fire stair, which is an important step toward gaining access to the second floor. And we just now are beginning our work with engineers to design the mechanical systems that'll support upstairs. There's, for those of you that haven't been in the building, you know, the space is very decayed. It was abandoned for more than 30 years. There's no mechanical systems whatsoever. There's lead paint. There's asbestos. There's a lot of abatement that has to happen first. And then the mechanical systems have to go in, and then the carpentry after that. But, you know, we're aiming at the next couple of years really being up there. And it's, no one wants it more, believe me. But we've finished 12 construction projects in the last 10 years.
Amazing.
And have invested more than $2 million in the building and opened most of the first floor. And as I said earlier, have over 1,000 programs. And that's just with the first floor open. So imagine what we can do when we get the second floor open. And we're well on the way to getting that done. And it's going to take everybody's help. So
I want to pick up on that investment and everybody's help comment. And of course, we've spoken this afternoon about the direct economic impact of the arts, you know, whether it's the parking meter or going to the restaurant, buying the ticket, buying the artwork off of the gallery walls, and the indirect impact in terms of creating a community where people want to come to live, to work, to visit. But when I talk with the business community, another thing that I talk about with them is ways they can invest beyond money. And it is, certainly in my experience, usually more successful to get them to invest something other than money first. And what we talk about is investing human capital. And whether it's a small business or whether it's a huge business in New York City, I'm trying to make the point that there are things that artists need and things that small arts organizations, even larger arts organizations, but particularly smaller ones, need that the business community has. And that can be, you know, financial analysis skills, organizational skills, operational skills, marketing skills, communication skills, HR, IT, real estate, you name it, all that stuff. And again, you know, different businesses are going to have more expertise in one area or another area, but they all have expertise in some area or in many areas that artists don't tend to have. And when a nonprofit arts organization puts together a board of directors, and I'm certainly familiar, I know that both of you serve on boards and are perfectly familiar with what I'm talking about. You know, you want a representation of the community, a representation of your potential audience, but you also want skill sets there. And that's great for the person who can make the larger commitment of serving on a board. But for years and years, Arts and Business Council has been running a program called Business Volunteers for the Arts. We focus it in New York City, but there's no reason why it cannot be implemented in any and every community. And it's an organized approach to getting people who are not themselves artists, but want to be connected with artists, want a different experience even than sitting in the seat and jumping to their feet and applauding when the curtain comes down. And we have found an enormous amount of success with getting people from the business community involved as artists. Before I worked at ABC, I was the manager of an off-Broadway theater in New York, and we had every problem there was. And I found out about this company, Arts and Business Council, some deal with Business Volunteers for the Arts. And I got hooked up with a guy who was one of the big accounting firms. I think it was with Ernst & Young. And he said, all right, listen, I'm talking to you because, you know, they told me that you wouldn't ask me for money. No, no, I won't ask you for money, I said. And he said, and you're not going to ask my company for money. No, 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 I wouldn't think of asking your... And worst, don't ask me to buy some table at some gala thing that you're doing. No, no, I wouldn't think of doing that. He said, okay, well, I think the theater is kind of cool, so if I can help you out, I'll help you out. And I gave him, you know, a giant cardboard box with a million scraps of paper in it. That was our entire financial record system. And over the course of several weeks, months of blood, sweat, and tears, he made it into an effective form of communication that allowed us to go back into the marketplace and ask for money from individuals, from other corporations, from the government, et cetera. Huge, huge. And I could never have paid anyone, could never have afforded to pay someone to do that. And I was true to my word. I didn't ask him to give money because he gave money of his own volition because he was having such a great time. I didn't ask his company to give money because, in fact, he went and asked his company to give money, which was so much more effective than me asking. And I didn't even have to ask him to buy the dreaded table at the dreaded gala because he went and got his company to buy the table at the gala. And that kind of success story, writ large or on a more intimate scale, can be duplicated everywhere. People are so in awe of artists, if you can open that door and let them know there's a way they can help and they can contribute beyond just giving from their wallet, then you'll get them engaged, and the wallet will follow.
We're listening to a community-based radio station that is almost entirely supported by volunteers. Gary, I'm sure, sees often volunteers coming in, even the people who curate some of the shows that you show in the gallery, the artists, some get paid, some do it for free. Carrie,
no,
when
I have to pay my own taxes, and I do not have volunteers.
But when you started Arts Walk, I think it's in the 17th year.
Yes, I was involved with, I think, 14 of them, 13 of them. And the volunteers are incredible. And if you ask people specifically what you want them to do, they, in this town anyhow, the only one I've experienced, it's amazing, the volunteers. The amazing what...
I don't think we could put together any arts or cultural event without volunteers.
Well, there's a great tradition of that. I was thinking of all the ways that we could... beat New York City in the per capita. So volunteers is another one.
Yes, that's true.
There are several other that come to mind, but certainly arts organizations and artists, just artists in general. There's such an amazing assortment of artists that live in this community.
And before we run out of time, I do want to mention a program that I've recently been involved with as a grant panelist. So I'm going to read this because I feel it's very important. The Community Arts Program is offering a $2,000 grant to Green and Columbia-based individual artists for the creation of new work that engages with the artist's community during the production stage. In fact, Gary, wasn't there a workshop yesterday at Opera House?
Monday, yeah.
And grants are intended to benefit a visual artist, choreographer, playwright, poet, composer, or writer's personal artist growth. And the community can be defined as geographical, racial, ethnic, or philosophical, and the inspiration dialogue between community and artist can be accomplished through setting, process, interviews, or other factors that influence the work. And there's a, this is for 2012 projects. The deadline is October 1st. And this evening, there is a free workshop at the Greene County Council on the Arts from 6 to 7:30. Colette Lemon is the grants director. This is a decentralization program. DEC, which supports these grants, is funded by the New York State Council on the Arts, NISCA, and is both Greene and Columbia counties through their arts organizations that administer this. I'm being at on the grant panel, we were just amazed that not a lot of artists took advantage of money that is available, and it is very difficult for artists to get to know this kind of information. So I just definitely wanted to put it out there. I feel it's very important. This is a $2,000 grant that will go to one artist in Greene County and one artist in Columbia County, and it is community-based. So I just wanted to support that before we close today. So we have just a few more minutes. I want to thank Gary Shiro and Kerry Haddad and Will Maitland Weiss. Anything the three of you want to say quickly, Kerry?
Chad, thanks for the fantastic music festival you put together. I was talking about volunteers. And, I mean, you did so much work.
Rob Johansson and I just, hundreds of hours, but it's for the love of community.
It was wonderful. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Gary.
As we have all said, help is out there.
Yes.
And I'm sure I speak for all three of us in terms of our interest in helping. My office may be in Midtown Manhattan, New York City, but my heart is up in the Hudson Valley, and I can be reached at www.artsandbusiness.org. And, of course, the radio station has the particulars as well.
And join the weekly newsletter that the organization puts out. And, Gary, the Opera House website?
HudsonOperaHouse.org, and there's a ton of things coming up for the fall, and I think that October 8th may in fact turn out to be the busiest arts day ever in Hudson, so stay tuned. There's a lot of stuff going on that Saturday of Arts Walk. It's going to be very exciting.
Well, thank you again for listening to the Art of the Hudson Valley and my guests, and I'll see you next month. This is Chad Weckler.
Listening to WGXC 90.